morning reads while sipping a cup of tea is the Knopfler Lab Stem Cell Blog. What makes it fascinating is not just the science, but everything around it. Paul Knopfler, who is the Associate Professor of Cell Biology and Human Anatomy at the Institute for Regenerative Cures, School of Medicine, University of California, Davis, also writes about dubious stem cell treatments, court cases, and how U.S. politics will affect the embryonic stem cell field. As some of you know, embryonic stem cell research was restricted under the Bush administration, but recently those restrictions were lifted when Obama was elected president. Embryonic stem cells are so useful as they can be used to build every type of organ and tissue in the human body, which makes it such an exciting and potential paradigm-altering field. However, this field could be radically changed, at least in the U.S.
My lab here at UC Davis School of Medicine in Sacramento, California, works on two related areas. We work on stem cell biology and also cancer biology. And we're particularly interested in the relationship between stem cells and cancer cells. It turns out, for better or worse, that stem cells and cancer cells are kind of cousins of each other and share a lot of things in common. And so that has important implications for the therapeutic use of stem cells, because stem cells may have some ability to cause cancers, to sort of act more like cancer cells themselves. And so we're trying to understand the molecules that give stem cells their unique properties and also the molecules they share with cancer cells. And perhaps in the future, if we better understand those molecules, we'll be able to make better stem cell therapies. But also, we're hoping to make new therapies against cancers. So that's kind of the long-term, big-picture goals for our lab.
And I quite like, and I think it's the advice for patients and thing, is calling out quacks. How many quack therapies or how many unlicensed treatments are there in the U.S.? How prevalent is it?
There's sort of a group of us scientists who are following this, and that's sort of become a, you might say, a second hat I've started to wear. So I'm a laboratory scientist, professor, and educator, but I'm also now, I consider myself also a patient advocate. So there's a group of us scientists and non-scientists who are patient advocates who are kind of trying to follow this trend of what we call dubious stem cell clinics. And so what you might refer to as the quacks. And there are some clinics that fall kind of in a gray area where, you know, I'm not sure the word quack is, maybe it's a little too strong for those, but they're kind of in the gray zone where they're not necessarily following all the rules. But I think they're at least trying to, to develop therapies for profit. But overall, I would say the trend that we're seeing is an increase in the number of these clinics, actually worldwide, not just in the U.S., but across the globe. And in general, there's sort of a few defining features of the types of clinics that fall into this category. And first thing is that they're for profit, so they're trying to make money. And there's nothing inherently wrong with that, but it provides sort of a second motivation that most scientists, don't have when we're doing, say, a clinical trial study. So these clinics are trying to make money, and typically they do not conform to the rules of the, relevant regulatory agency, for example, the FDA here in the US. So they're trying to make money and they're not sort of playing by the official rules. And we see, like I said, the number of clinics doing that is really going way up. So that's why we've gotten more concerned kind of as a field about this. There's a lot of dangers, not only to the patients, but also, just to the stem cell field itself.
Have there been any reports of reactions to the non-FDA or Food Drug Administration approved treatments that you know of?
Yes. So, and I think it's a tricky area and it's a great question. I think there have been reports related to a physician. I think his last name is Grekos. And I believe he was practicing in Florida. And a couple of his patients actually died. And it's not entirely clear if And they had received stem cell transplants, and it's not entirely clear if the transplants themselves were part of what made the patients have such a negative outcome, or, you know, if it was something else. But there also have been a few reports in the literature about negative outcomes, if you want to use sort of a more scientific term. Some patients end up getting autoimmune, you know, very violent autoimmune reactions to stem cell treatments. And then more globally, there have been reports of dubious treatments actually leading to deaths. I believe a baby in Germany. And then there was also, I think, a young adult or teenager who passed away from a dubious treatment. I think that was either in Israel or Russia. But you know, like you were alluding to, it can be a little bit tricky to know whether or not a stem cell treatment actually is the cause of someone, you know, having a negative outcome, like getting sick or something. And part of the challenge is that the clinics that sort of fall under what I would say, you know, dubious moniker, they don't really track patient outcomes typically. And so for example, in a FDA-approved clinical trial, the physicians involved are required to follow the patient sometimes up to for decades after they receive a certain treatment. And so in that case, you can really, you know, rigorously and scientifically evaluate a possible, you know, propensity for a drug or a stem cell medicine to cause problems. But in the context of a for-profit sort of stem cell industry, it's much more difficult to know what's going on because the patients come, they pay, they get their treatment, and then they go away. And unless they, you know, contact the media or file a complaint with some, you know, medical advisory board or file a lawsuit, we may never know what really happened with them positively or negatively. So it's pretty tricky.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to interview as well is in December you posted a blog about the perfect storm against stem cell research in the terms of a Republican presidency. So going back to the last Republican presidency, what were the restrictions that were in place on stem cell research, and what did this mean for stem cell research in the U.S.?
Yeah, so I think it's very important to sort of track the history here, and going back to G.W. Bush, he restricted the use of federal funds for stem cell research, and I mean embryonic stem cell research in that case, to embryonic stem cell lines that already existed. And so what his ruling did is it sort of placed boundaries on the field and limited the stem cell field to only work on existing embryonic stem cell lines. And so while in one sense it was nice to sort of get a legal definition that certain cells could be used, on the other hand, it kind of put the brakes on the field because it sort of froze us in time. You know, it's sort of a funny play on words because we were limited to only the frozen cells that we already had, you know, and new embryonic stem cell lines could not be made. So what that meant is, over the period of time when he was president, that no new lines could be derived, and we had to use only the old lines. And there's nothing necessarily quote-unquote bad about these old embryonic stem cell lines, except for the fact they were made using sort of older technology. And so over the 8 years of the Bush administration, as technology advanced and we sort of learned new ways to make better embryonic stem cell lines, say, you know, using mice, or private companies might have made new human embryonic stem cell lines and found new methods and things, federally funded researchers were not allowed to use those technological advances to make new human embryonic stem cell lines that might have been more, say, clinically appropriate, you know, or safer to use. So I think there's a sense in the stem cell field that we kind of lost a good amount of time measured in years because of President Bush. At the same time, so I'm here in California, we were fortunate that we had the California Stem Cell Agency. We call that CIRM by its acronym, C-I-R-M. And so CIRM, during the Bush administration, funded a lot of human embryonic stem cell work that otherwise would not have been able to go on. And so I think CIRM, you know, was very helpful. But again, that was just in one out of 50 states. So overall, I think, you know, it definitely slowed things down.
I was fascinated by that, as the US is a major medical research country, as it were. Were there any other countries that face similar restrictions?
I think in general, there have been other countries that were less restrictive. But I believe there have been other countries where embryonic stem cell research is more limited. I'm trying to remember, you know, specifics of that. I'm not sure. I think in Italy and in Eastern Europe, I know at least via some of the polling data I've seen, I know there's a lot less support in those countries for embryonic stem cell work. But offhand, I don't recall legally, you know, if there are actually laws passed saying that people could not do that kind of work. So the U.S., I think it's probably not the only country, but it was fairly restrictive. And so there was also this argument that the Bush administration regulations might lead to somewhat of an exodus of researchers leaving the U.S. to go to other countries that, you know, may have less restrictive regulations for embryonic stem cell research. And I'm not sure if that really happened or not. I do know some researchers who left the U.S., but it could be difficult to really trace whether or not the U.S. having a stricter legal system in terms of embryonic stem cells, you know, would lead to us as a country, you know, getting weaker in that regard. I'm not sure.
Was it in 2009 that Obama repealed the restrictions?
I believe so, yes.
How have things changed since that happened?
I think it's been helpful. So he, you know, he's opened the door to the production of additional embryonic stem cell lines. And so I know there have been a number of different new lines, and I'm not sure of the exact number that have come out since Obama, you know, repealed the Bush restrictions, but I thought it was in the dozens. So sort of practically speaking, the more new lines that can be obtained up to a certain point, the more we can potentially, you know, use those clinically to help patients, also study them to better understand stem cell research. But I think there's sort of been a second effect, which is more on sort of like the energy and the sort of momentum of the field. I think the Obama repeal of the restrictions was very good for the stem cell field, because it also, I guess, it sort of gave some reassurance to embryonic stem cell researchers, if you want to call them that, although many of them also study adult stem cells. You know, it gave them a sense that they could continue working on this, because even, you know, just the sense of sort of uncertainty that the Bush restrictions put on the field probably slowed things down, you know, not just practically speaking, but also just people got a sense, you know, researchers maybe were a little more reluctant to study something that the federal government doesn't, you know, wholly approve of. So I think Obama's, you know, reversal of the Bush restrictions has been helpful in a number of ways.
And there was a recent U.S. Federal Court of Appeals ruling about stem cell research. Who brought the case forward and what was it about?
Yeah, so there have been a number of groups over the years here in the U.S. that have tried to take a bit of a different route to blocking embryonic stem cell research, and that is in the courts. So we talked about the Bush regulations, you know, that's at the presidential level. We also have legislation over the years that federal funding cannot be used for research that ends up destroying an embryo. And then based upon that legislation that sort of carried on year to year without anyone ever really changing it, some opponents of embryonic stem cell research sued the federal government, and by that I mean the Obama administration, for lifting the embryonic stem cell restrictions, but also our federal funder of biomedical research called NIH. And so these plaintiffs sued the government and NIH to stop federal funding of embryonic stem cell research. And the two main plaintiffs who ended up in the end were these two doctors who sort of defined themselves as only adult stem cell researchers, and they're opponents of embryonic stem cell researchers and research. And the sort of basic idea behind their federal lawsuit was that embryonic stem cell research leads to the destruction of embryos, and so the federal government should not fund that based upon this old amendment I was talking about that bans federal funding of research that actually destroys embryos. So the two plaintiffs were making this interesting argument that even research on existing embryonic stem cell lines, you know, that someone might take out of our freezer was actually violating this federal law, if you will, because they argued that using the cells was sort of the same thing as destroying the embryo. So it was a little bit of a sort of a logical stretch there, I think. And so this case has gone through sort of snaking through the different courts in the U.S. for a number of years now, you know, higher and higher, getting appealed at different levels. And we finally had this most recent federal court appeals ruling that in essence ruled in favor of the defendants, the Obama administration and NIH, and said that the plaintiff's case, basically they didn't make a case that was legally sound to block federal funding of embryonic stem cell research. So that's a little bit of the history there. And I think talking with many people in the field, we view this as a really positive development. It was a unanimous ruling by this court, and it doesn't, you know, close the book on things entirely, because the two plaintiffs now can take a number of different strategies to appeal it yet again. So it's not over, but at least it was good news for the ruling at this level.
So what can happen if they succeed at a later appeal? The way they're going, it sounds like it would be even harsher than the Bush restrictions.
Yeah, I think you're right. So so they have sort of two main options now with their appeals. They can ask the full U.S. Federal Court of Appeals to rule on the case, because the initial ruling that came down recently was actually just by a 3-judge panel of that court. And so a lot of people think that the people suing to stop the embryonic stem cell research will now ask the full 11 judges of the U.S. Court of Appeals if they're willing to rule on the case. So if that motion is granted, then the full Court of Appeals will rule, and they could rule against the government, and they could block embryonic stem cell research. Alternatively, the plaintiffs could take their appeal directly to the Supreme Court, which is the highest court in the U.S., and at that point, the U.S. Supreme Court could hear the case and rule on it, or they could decline to hear it, in which case the appeals court ruling would stand, and that would be the end of it. However, if the plaintiffs do convince the Supreme Court to hear the case, the U.S. Supreme Court is fairly conservative right now, and so there's a feeling out there that, you know, at best, maybe we'd have a 50-50 chance of the Supreme Court supporting embryonic stem cell research. It's a pretty aggressive conservative Supreme Court at this point. So if we were to lose either with the U.S. Federal Court of Appeals or with the Supreme Court, and ultimately the human embryonic stem cell research would indeed be blocked in terms of federal funding, I think the impact would be quite severe. Again, there are state agencies in the U.S. that will support human embryonic stem cell research, such as CIRM in California and the New York Stem Cell Agency, but we really need NIH funding, because that's, you know, national funding, and it's funding at a very significant level to help advance the research. So the verdict could come down in a number of different ways, but it indeed could be far more severe than the restrictions that President Bush had put on the field, because a number of scholars interpret the case to mean that all research on embryonic stem cell research could not be supported by federal funding, whereas Bush, you know, had said some lines could be used. So the stakes are pretty high here, and you know, we're feeling a little bit optimistic because the U.S. federal court ruled, you know, most recently in our favor. But, you know, at this point, it's pretty hard to predict what will happen.
That is fairly scary.
My lab has a grant from NIH to study embryonic stem cells. So, and I know there are dozens of other labs like that. And so we're kind of like walking on a tightrope. We don't really know. You know, we're partway into our grants, and we don't even know, you know, next year, you know, will this work be allowed to be federally funded? You know, what will happen if a court rules against it? You know, could they suspend the funding? And So I was talking with a group of researchers last week, and we all kind of agreed that there's already been somewhat of a chilling effect on the research because of this legal case. So the plaintiffs, in a way, have already won at least a little bit of their battle because they've slowed down embryonic stem cell research, and they've injected some uncertainty into the field, and that might make people less inclined to want to study these cells if they're not sure they're going to be able to get funding.
Well, on to even some slightly more chilling news. The current Republicans, given that the candidates, Romney and Ryan, are so pro-life, if the Republicans won the election, do you think it would be assumed that similar restrictions or even harsher restrictions would be put back in place?
I think that's likely. I view Romney as a little bit unpredictable just because it seems like to me there's at least two sides to him. There's, you know, himself and what he thinks, and then there's the Romney that he, you know, portrays that is more, you know, extreme, to sort of cater to the more extreme side of the Republican Party, and that's how I think he got nominated. And so, you know, I'm not sure which Romney would show up if he actually won the election. You know, would it be the Governor Romney of Massachusetts, or would it be the sort of Romney 2.0, you know, who's ultra, ultra conservative, at least in what he says to the press? So I'm kind of scared of either of them being president, to be honest. I think Paul Ryan, you know, the vice presidential candidate, seems far more extreme than Romney himself. So if they were to win, I think it would be, you know, my prediction would be it would be bad for science more generally in the U.S., but also certainly I can't imagine it would be good news for the stem cell field, and definitely it would not be good news for embryonic stem cell research. They have both, to my knowledge, I think they've both sort of signed on to this idea of personhood, where a fertilized egg is considered to have the same rights as a, you know, walking, thinking, breathing person. So that's a pretty extreme perspective on the world, to think that a fertilized egg is a person. And you know, whether or not they're signing on to that idea as candidates would translate into very, you know, severe action, you know, as a new administration, I'm not sure, but I'm concerned that could happen. And so that could not only, you know, restrict embryonic stem cell research, but have other impact as well on, you know, contraception and women's health rights. And so I think these guys are pretty extreme, and definitely am concerned as well. You know, we were just talking before about the federal appeals legal case. If that case is going to continue for another year or two, it's not entirely clear that if Romney won the election, that the case, you know, it may be that the new administration would not support NIH in that case anymore. And I don't know what would happen in that scenario. It could be pretty ugly for the stem cell research field.
Just if the worst happened and there were restrictions again for another 8 years, how fast is the field moving? Would it be, I don't want to say like the end of stem cell research in the US, but like how much would this put you behind like places like Canada and the UK and Germany and Europe and places like that?
Definitely think it would be a major handicap for research in the US. And it actually is an extremely rapidly progressing field. So a year, you know, a year or 2 years, 4 years, 8 years of very strict legal restrictions on a field like the stem cell field that moves so fast, you know, it really could be a very disastrous effect. And partially also the reason that we're also concerned about this, again, it's sort of this perfect storm concept, is that let's say Romney won and he won, you know, one term or two terms. During a Romney administration, the California Stem Cell Agency, which has really been, you know, like I said, a major funder of this kind of research, its time of existence, at least as a state-funded agency, will also end coming up in a few years. And so we could have a Romney administration that's very hostile to embryonic stem cell research, and then, you know, this federal court case could go against embryonic stem cell research, and at this time CIRM may cease to exist, and so that big funder of embryonic stem cell research may stop. And again, this may all sort of intersect and come into play at roughly the same time. And so if this leads to very, you know, substantial slowing of embryonic stem cell research in the U.S., I think there's a chance we'll be left behind because, like I said, the field moves very, very fast. You know, I joked the other day that the stem cell field sort of moves in dog years, you know, like 1 year in real time is sort of like 7 years in the embryonic or in the general stem cell field, just because it moves so, so fast.
So the depressing ending question, what would happen to your lab if these sort of restrictions were put in place?
Well, I guess it depends on the severity of the restrictions. There's sort of a spectrum of going from bad to really ugly, horrible. So in the kind of bad area would be if the field was restricted, sort of put back in time to the Bush era restrictions. I would consider that bad, although probably not disastrous, because at least some research could continue. But I think most people feel that if we lose this federal court case again, that this could restrict all embryonic stem cell research and put it all together, including the Bush cell lines, into sort of this, you know, forbidden category. So we can't get federal funding for that. So if that comes to pass, then I think it's going to be more disastrous. And, you know, basically the funding's going to end. A lot of the research will stop and a lot of jobs will be lost, and probably that will be difficult to ever really recover from for the U.S. Again, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with the president. We don't really know what's going to happen with the legal court case. But I think we're, again, you know, you could use the analogy, we're really sort of hanging by a thread or walking on a tightrope. And there's really a feeling that it wouldn't take a whole lot of bad luck for embryonic stem cell research in the U.S. to end up being limited, say, to only for-profit companies. And I think, although, you know, I'm very excited about the for-profit work, that's just a fraction of what we should be doing. So it's pretty scary.
Well, we're all hoping Obama wins over here in the UK. So we'll hopefully that happens and the court case goes away. But thank you very much for talking to us. That's quite amazing to hear coming from the US that kind of cutting-edge research can just be shut down like that.
It's a little scary when ideology can trump science, you know.
This has been Liz Ostendorf, a little more terrified of the outcome of the US presidential election for the Pod Delusion.